Hi, yeah, when I heard you talking about Bill Free taking the mic and Stephen Mead at the top of the hour and all that stuff, I thought, wow, I must have the day off. And then I realized it was a recording. Like, oh, wait a second, this has to be a recording. So here I am at the top of the hour. I'm not alone today. I have a few friends with me, maybe one more arriving. Jane Marie is here. She's visiting, has been here for about 3 weeks, right? And she's on her way to Utah. And then Jacqueline and Tom are here. That's who Jane Marie's been staying with. And then Ruby may show up. So, and Jamie's here sleeping. So if you hear snoring, I think it's Jamie. I suppose somebody else could fall asleep. Oh, Ruby must be here. I think Ruby has arrived. All right, so happy Monday, everyone. We are here for the 7 steps to awakening. Today we are going to be starting with number 126, and I do have a link for you. The link, of course, is to my journal. And just for the recording, if you want to listen along, or just for the radio, if you want to read along, the link to the journal is RDA7, that is the digit 7, not spelled out, RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. Again, that's RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And when you get to the journal, you'll notice up on the menu bar, there's a step 1 and a step 2 so far. You'll click on step 1 and then find your way to quote number 126. And that's where we're starting. Hello, Ruby.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
Well, you have a hat on today. That's pretty brave.
Yeah.
It's windy in Pueblo West, to say the least.
It almost blew me away.
Yeah. You should have seen me at Walmart. I went to Walmart and bought groceries today. I couldn't even hardly get out of the car because I couldn't open the car door. I was like pushing with, and then really holding it open because I didn't want to slam shut on me while I was getting it out. And I also did not park near anyone because if the wind grabs a hold of your car door, slam into someone else. So I park in the back kind of by myself on days like today. But yeah, we're experiencing a bit of wind. And Dove says Jasmine hates wind, so I'm assuming she must have posted that somewhere. Dove knows that. All right, before we go into 126, what we are going to do is begin with just a moment of silence. So let me take just a sip of water first. All right, and let's go into the silence. Amen. All right. So, as I mentioned, I will begin by reading from the book, The 7 Steps to Awakening, page 35, quote 126. And this quote is credited to someone called the Supreme Yoga, whom I have not yet looked up, so I don't know who that is. But it doesn't matter to me who it is. So, here we go. Number 126, the Supreme Yoga. All this discussion and argumentation take place only in and because of ignorance. When there is knowledge, there is no duality. When the truth is known, all descriptions cease and silence alone remains. Then you will realize that there is only one, without beginning and without end. But as long as words are used to denote a truth, duality is inevitable. However such, duality is not the truth. All divisions are illusory. I kind of paused in the middle. I don't know if you guys heard it. In me, it was a loud pause. I don't know what it sounded like on the outside. But it was as if I heard these words in a dream last night, and I was pausing to try and conjure up the memory of where I would have heard these words recently. I don't recall reading this last night. You know, we stopped at 125. I did not go ahead to 126. So it was just kind of a strange experience of, you know, like I heard these read to me last night. So maybe I did. Let me go ahead and read these words one more time, and then we will look at the journal. All this discussion and argumentation take place only in and because of ignorance. When there is knowledge, there is no duality. When the truth is known, all descriptions cease and silence alone remains. Then you will realize that there is only one, without beginning and without end. But as long as words are used to denote a truth, duality is inevitable. However such, duality is not the truth. All divisions are illusory. So I will post the link to the journal one more time, and then we will go and read the journal. This is what I wrote after contemplating this quote. What is there to argue about? Isn't what is present, present? Can that be argued? All arguing and disagreeing is regarding concept or interpretation only. When concept and interpretation is seen as invalid, can there be arguing? If I can disagree with anyone on any point, that point is invalid. Truth cannot be disagreed with. Since this is true, I can keep quiet and not disagree. Although this was written on January 25th of this year, this was actually a realization that I had at some time last year. And for me, it was a pretty important realization that I held on to out of choice. It was the realization that if I can disagree with you or anyone on anything, that which we are disagreeing on is not truth. That was my realization. Because truth cannot be disagreed with. So we could think we're talking about truth. We could think we're talking about the interpretation of a line in A Course in Miracles, for example. I'll just wait a second. It's in there somewhere. Okay, thank you. We could think that we are disagreeing on a line in A Course in Miracles, and you know, if we're both being, you know, caught up in ignorance, as the Supreme Yoga says, well, then I could think that my interpretation of that line is correct. And you could think that your interpretation of that line is correct. And we could probably each go out and find witnesses who would join us in stating that my interpretation of that line is correct, or your interpretation of that line is correct. But what the Supreme Yoga is saying is all of that is ignorance. If we can disagree, then we are caught up in duality, and duality is not truth. It's that plain. For me, right now, with my limited seeing and realization. The only truth that I can recognize is what I would call is or isness, being, some people might call it. I think some people call it awareness. And that's really what this first line in the journal entry is referring to when it says, what is there to argue about? Isn't what is present, present? Can that be argued? I've not yet found a person who will argue with me on the fact that they experience being. We can argue on the fact, we can argue on the question, what experiences being? You know, we can argue on, am I a person? Am I caught up in the I thought? Am I enlightened? You know, we can argue about what experiences being, but I haven't found anyone yet that will argue that they experience being, experience existence, experience isness. That does not seem to be arguable, not when talking about themselves. Sometimes people may argue about others. You know, they'll say, well, I experience being, but that person there is a projection. That person there does not experience being. They're just a projection. You can argue there. But see, whenever you can get off into disagreement, you've gotten off into duality and you've gotten off into ignorance. And like I said, when this realization came for me, it was pretty clear, because it just meant, you know, if anything that I can disagree with someone else on is ignorance, is duality, well then what is there to disagree on? And so I think what's happened to me since then is that I think you don't find me disagreeing. I think that, for example, if I make a post and someone comes and makes, you know, what you could call a counter post, you don't see me coming back and making a counter post. It just stops there. Because it seems like to dive into that game is to dive into ignorance. And I don't see how diving into ignorance is at all helpful. So what is there to argue about? Isn't what is present, present? Can that be argued? All arguing and disagreeing is regarding concept or interpretation only. When concept and interpretation is seen as invalid, can there be arguing? For me, the answer is no. If I can disagree with anyone on any point, that point is invalid. You know, so again, there's nothing to disagree with. If the fact that we disagree makes the point invalid, well, then there's nothing to disagree on, is there? If I can disagree with anyone on any point, that point is invalid itself. Truth cannot be disagreed with. Since this is true, I can keep quiet and not disagree. And I can't read this without thinking about Bill Thetford. I'm sure you all have heard the story, or many of you have heard the story about two people in his presence were disagreeing on an interpretation of a page in A Course in Miracles. And Bill said something to them to the effect that Jesus would not want you to argue and disagree over that, what that means. He would prefer that you just tear the page out of the book, right? If I can disagree with anyone on any point, that point is invalid. That's a fact. All right, so let's scroll down and look to the left. You'll see a little 127 there. You can click on that 127. And my friend Jay has entered the room, so I will repost this link. Here's the link to 127. I'll get a drink of water, and then we'll see what the Supreme Yoga has to say next. Number 127. Ideas and experiences leave their mark on the mind, which form the impressions or conditioning tendencies, which are for the most part latent or dormant. But when the mind is rid of these, the veil vanishes in a moment, like mist at sunrise, and with it the greatest sorrow also vanishes. This, of course, would be, what the Course in Miracles would refer to as the unconsciousness, right? The latent or dormant impressions, conditioning, or tendencies, right? Ideas and experiences leave their mark on the mind, which form the impressions or conditioning tendencies, which are for the most part latent or dormant, not consciously aware. We're not consciously aware of them. But when the mind is rid of these, the veil vanishes in a moment, like mist at sunrise, and with it the greatest sorrow also vanishes. All right, so I'm going to go to the journal, number 127. Here is what I wrote. What are obstacles to truth realization? Unseen tendencies, which are the mark of past believing, habitually lived again and again. Acting and thinking without heart guidance discernment, repeats past patterns and does not disengage from them. This keeps illusion in place. Ask the heart to reveal these obstacles with its knowing discernment. Ask the heart to lead so that unseen, entrenched tendencies are dissolved. For me, one of the things that has been most helpful to noticing my unseen tendencies has been living with other people. Jasmine and I started living with other people in, 2007 with Laurent. He was the first. but since then, it's been nonstop. Jasmine and I have not lived alone since then. And what happens when you live either alone or you live in a family culture is that your habits become normal. Your habits become accepted in that household culture. And so you're not aware of the fact that they are ego habits. They just seem like the normal way to live. Danielle's here. Hey, Danielle. I wasn't expecting that. She works today. She told me she was coming home early, but I thought she meant like 4. So when you're living in a culture that's been developed by either yourself because you live alone or been developed by a family, you aren't aware of your ego habits that just appear normal. But when you live with others that are from outside of your family culture, all kinds of disagreements can show up. And in fact, they can be so petty, it's ridiculous, and yet they can seem so important. What we're really seeing here is some of our unseen tendencies, some of our unseen beliefs, some of our unseen habits, the mark. We can judge our worthiness, for example, on how much dust there is in the house or how many things are laying around or how the toothpaste is squeezed or, we could go on and on and on. And then we have someone else who doesn't judge their worthiness on that. They judge it on something else, and therefore they do differently than we do, and things get very, very tense very, very quickly. So my experience has been that one of the greatest blessings that Holy Spirit has given me was first Laurent, but then a host of others who have lived with me and who have all been different. And what they give me the opportunity to do is to notice how I am still holding on to the idea of Regina. and what I attempt to do to the best of my ability when I notice these tendencies is just to say that's not important and just surrender that. I know you all have heard me talk about the fact that when I lived with Laurent, I surrendered to having a house that wasn't clean. And our house, trust me, was not clean at all. It's back to being fairly clean now. But if, you know, if I lived with another Laurent and it just wasn't, I now know I could go back to that. I don't have to have a clean house. You know, there are things I learned with Debbie. There are things I learned with Danielle. There were things I learned with Carolyn. There were things I learned with, I had a Deborah for a while that was living with me. There are things I've learned with guests. But probably what's most important, whether we're living with someone or whether we're being provided with other opportunities to see our unseen tendencies, what's most important is our desire to see them and our desire to surrender them or let them go. We have to want to let go of the personality. If we don't want to let go of the personality, we will just see the other person as wrong. And we will just, you know, fight in some way, whether it's internally or externally, struggle in some way to keep things our way to the best of our ability. So when this says, ask the heart to reveal these obstacles with its knowing discernment, it's really asking us to sincerely and fully be willing to lay down the personality and then ask to see all of the ways that we cling to it so that we can start to lay them down. And my experience is there are thousands upon thousands of ways we cling to the personality. So what are obstacles to truth realization? Unseen tendencies, which are the mark of past believing, habitually lived again and again. Acting and thinking without heart guidance discernment repeats past patterns and does not disengage from them. This keeps illusion in place. Ask the heart to reveal these obstacles with its knowing discernment. Ask the heart to lead so that unseen, entrenched tendencies are dissolved. And again, I just want to be very clear, we are talking about letting go of the personality. That's what this is talking about. That's what those unseen tendencies are that are habitually lived again and again. The way you react, the way you control your environment, the things you think you need for happiness, the things you think make you unhappy and therefore you can't have in your environment. All of that is what needs to be let go of, not maintained. And the personality tries very hard to maintain it. So this takes great willingness. Great willingness. And the Course in Miracles says that relationships are a great way to go through this letting go process. It calls it forgiveness. And A Course in Miracles is correct. Relationships are a great way to go through this letting go process. All right, let's scroll down then and to the left, and we will click on number 128. Melissa Honeybee Rose has entered the room, so I will post the link in the room as well. All right, and I'm going to read from the Supreme Yoga. Number 128 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. Conceptualization or imagination is productive of error and sorrow. I'll read that again. Conceptualization or imagination is productive of error and sorrow, and it can be so easily got rid of by self-knowledge. And when it is got rid of, there is great peace. Let's go ahead and read the journal, number 128. If I attach to an idea or interpretation as right or true, someone may come along and prove me wrong. Because the identity I am right has naturally followed attachment, being proven wrong shatters my false identity and leads to unhappiness. Why step into this trap at all? Instead, remain present without an idea of knowing. In this state of innocent purity, there is only childlike, happy joy. One thing that I just am becoming increasingly, and I don't know how far this can go, it keeps going. I am becoming increasingly aware of the fact that the mind is imagination believed. I just watch it all the time in myself. I watch it all the time in others. I watch us make up stuff and believe it with lightning speed, so fast that we don't even know we made it up. It's just amazing. Because I've become more aware of it, when I'm with people, I'll use Jasmine as an example, and Jasmine's asking questions, which are normal questions, and they're questions I would have normally answered before. Things like, what's going to happen when we get there? How many people are going to be there? What's this going to be like? Used to, I would have answered, oh, there'll probably be around 30 people there. Oh, we're probably going to do this. We're probably going to... Now I just say, Jasmine, you're asking me to make up an answer and give it to you as if it's a fact. Is that what you want? And sometimes she still says yes. I say, okay, well, then there's going to be 30 people there. But at least I've clarified that I'm making up an answer and giving it to her as if it's a fact. You know, and we size up people. You know, we have ideas about who people are, what events are about, what someone meant by what they said. I think I remember one time sharing here in the Seven Steps teaching about how Jasmine and I were driving to school and there was a truck parked by the road. And Jasmine said, Mama, what's he doing? And I found myself in mid-sentence as I was making up, oh, well, his kid's in there and he doesn't want to put his kid out in the cold to wait for the bus. So he's, I just was making it up. And then right in the middle, I'm like, I'm making this up, Jasmine. You guys have no idea, unless you're also already watching this. You have no idea. I mean, it's just amazing. It goes on and on and on. When you start paying attention to the mind, making up crap, which is quickly believed and then passed on as if it's meaningful, it's just unbelievable. And then... the real sad part of the joke is this crap that we are making up and believing is the cause of our own suffering. Because a part of the crap that we make up is I don't like such and such. I don't like crowds. And so when there's a crowd there, suddenly I'm unhappy. I don't like wind. And so when we have a day like this in Pueblo West, I suddenly have something to bitch about. And do you know what? We may believe that we don't like crowds, or we may believe that we don't like wind, but that's just because we made something up and believed it with lightning speed. It's not true. It's never been true. And we've been making up stuff at least all of this lifetime. And then we're saying, that's who I am. It's actually a little sad when you realize what an addictive habit this is and just how much of it we do and how caught up we are in the believing of our own made-up crap. But of course, I love, and I'm going back to what the Supreme Yoga says. I love what the Supreme Yoga says. He says, conceptualization or imagination is productive of error, because you're wrong, it's not a kid sitting there waiting for the bus, and sorrow, because you've made up the fact that you hate the wind. Right? Conceptualization or imagination is productive of error and sorrow. And, this is the part I love, it can so easily it can be so easily got rid of by self-knowledge. What is self-knowledge? Self-knowledge is realizing what I am, which is more easily stated by stating what I am not, the personality, this pile of beliefs in my head. If I have even an inkling of sincere realization that I am not this pile of beliefs in my head, then what happens when these beliefs appear, again, out of conditioning, out of habitual believing again and again, what starts to happen is I start to realize that's not true. And do you realize that if I've always thought I've hated the wind, I've bitched every single windy day ever, when the day hits, that's just a thought that I've believed, I instantly can stop believing I hate the wind. And I can actually enjoy the wind, have an excitement, say, wow, look at that. That's amazing. You know, a completely different experience of the wind. It's so easily gotten rid of by self-knowledge. But again, we're back to the same place we were with the last quote. We have to be willing to let go of the personality as who I am. If I am so in love with Regina that I want to keep her intact, then I will not see these things that Regina has always made up and believed, because that's a part of who she is. The only way I'm going to start seeing these things that Regina has always made up and believed is to want, with great willingness, to let go of the belief that I am her. I have to want to let go of her entirely. I have to be willing to let her die. So if I attach to an idea or interpretation as right or true, someone may come along and prove me wrong. This is just a gentle introduction into this idea. Because the identity I am right has naturally followed attachment, I'm right about what that book means, or I'm right about what that person meant, or I'm right about what's going to happen when we get there, right? Because the identity I am right has naturally followed attachment, being proven wrong shatters my false identity and leads to unhappiness. We've all had the experience of not liking being proven wrong, even on minor points. Why step into this trap at all? Instead, remain present without an idea of knowing. Be willing to let "I don't know" be the most common sentence that comes out of your mouth. If you're willing to let "I don't know" be the most common sentence that comes out of your mouth, you'll stop making up stuff and believing it. Remain present without an idea of knowing. In this state of innocent purity, there is only childlike happy joy. All right, let's go ahead and scroll down and to the left. We'll click on number 129. And I don't think there's anyone new in the room, but I could be wrong. So I will post the link. All right, so now we're going on to number 129. I will start in the 7 Steps to Awakening, the Supreme Yoga. Ideas and thoughts are bondage, and their coming to an end is liberation. Ideas and thoughts are bondage, and their coming to an end is liberation. All right, let's look at the journal, number 129. Ideas and thoughts are like a closed lid on the entirety of what is. Ideas and thoughts say it is only this. Without ideas and thoughts, entirety is open, forever, endlessly open, and that is freedom. Again, you could pick just one subject, your job, someone you know, yourself, and start writing down everything you know about that person or that circumstance. And if you're paying attention, you won't have to get very far to notice that you have defined it. You have limited it And in effect, you are saying, it is only this. And you can imagine that if you put "it is only this" on everything, how limiting that perspective is. So again, what we want to do is let go of believing. This is the same thought repeated in a different way. Let go of believing the things that we make up and believe. Because it is the making up and believing, you know, as the Supreme Yoga said in the previous quote, that is productive of error and sorrow. We're wrong, and it's the cause of our suffering. And again, the only way we can let go of what we make up and believe is first to notice that we made it up. And the way we start to see what we are making up is by having great willingness to let go of the personality and to ask within, whether you ask the heart, whether you ask the Holy Spirit, whether you ask Jesus, whether you ask God, whether you ask Ramana, to ask within, help me see. Because remember, like the Supreme Yoga has already made clear, these are unseen tendencies, unseen impressions, conditioning. They're believed and lived again and again. They're so much a part of what we think we are. They're so habitual, we are unaware of them. Yes, unconscious patterns. And so we need to ask, we need to have great willingness to see. But my experience is, if you want to see, you will. 95% of the time, I see it in the doing of it or the saying of it. You know, like the sentence is coming out of my mouth. I'm already there. But that's when the seeing occurs, and that's okay. That's okay. It doesn't matter if the scene occurs while you're in the process of doing it or in the process of saying it. The point is, the scene occurs. And then we can start to change our mind about repeating these habits. All right, let's scroll down, and we will come to number 130 on the left, and you can click on 130. And I will post the link in the room. And the Supreme Yoga says, give up mental conditioning, which alone is responsible for the perception of duality, and remain totally unconditioned. So it looks like we're still staying with the same thought today. Give up mental conditioning, which alone is responsible for the perception of duality, and remain totally unconditioned. All right, let's look at the journal, number 130. With heart's wisdom guidance, be willing to discover all ideas, thoughts, beliefs, definitions, concepts, and habits that maintain ongoing mental definition. Be willing to disregard everything that has been learned from past experience, from culture, formal education, spiritual education, and life. Let it all go. Hold on to nothing, not to one single idea. Stay perpetually open. Of course, this is very much like A Course in Miracles, workbook lesson 189, paragraph 7, which is the famous "forget this course" paragraph. And we do make those mistakes. I mean, there is a point in the process of letting go of our old thought system. There is a point where learning occurs. But that learning is temporary. That learning is a temporary bridge. And the purpose of that learning is to get us to the point where we are willing to let go of everything we've ever thought or believed. And that would then include the learning itself. It was temporary. So, of course, the mistake that we make is thinking that what we've learned is truth, whether we're learning it from A Course in Miracles or from some other source. And I have not yet found a group, regardless of how much truth is taught through that group, I've not yet found a group that doesn't have what I call a fundamentalist attachment to it. I mean, since most of us are from the Course community, we certainly know that there are Course fundamentalists, people who think the Course is the truth, and they compare everything to the Course, and the Course is the best thing there is, right? We know that. But if you get into the Advaita group, you will find people who are that way about Advaita. And, you know, to some of the Advaita people, devotion, other spiritual paths are just not as superior as Advaita. If you happen to go to an interfaith church where they mix and match everything, you can find people there that are the same thing. It has to be interfaith. I guess there's something about the mind that just really wants to be attached. It'll be attached to whatever the heck it can be attached to. And so that's something that we need to watch. You know, interfaith, Advaita, A Course in Miracles, you know, it may all come into our awareness as a part of the teaching that is needed to get us to the point where we are willing to release all attachments, all beliefs, all thoughts, all ideas. But we want to be weary of the tendency to attach to that which is teaching us, because that's just the same error repeated again. This reminds me of NTI and NTI Revelation. There's a line in NTI Revelation 1 that says something like, your job is to keep moving by letting go until there is nothing left to let go of. So with heart's wisdom guidance, be willing to discover all ideas, thoughts, beliefs, definitions, concepts, and habits that maintain ongoing mental definition. Be willing to disregard everything that has been learned from past experience, from culture, formal education, spiritual education, and life. Let it all go. Hold on to nothing, not to one single idea. Stay perpetually open. And again, if you aren't familiar with A Course in Miracles, workbook lesson 189, paragraph 7, go ahead and write that down and read that afterwards. For me, it's the best paragraph in the course. All right, let's scroll down. And on the left, we can click on number 131. And I am pasting the link in the room. I'm also noticing I'm getting hungry, so I'm glad my friends have come over for lunch. I'm glad it's only 15 minutes away. All right, number 131 is at the top of page 36. We're still reading the Supreme Yoga. A painted pot of nectar is not nectar, nor a painted flame fire, and a painting of a woman is not a woman. Wise words are mere words, not wisdom. I love how he puts that all together. You know, he's talking, of course, about a painted pot of nectar, right? Something very sweet is not nectar. It's just a painted pot of nectar, right? Nor a painted flame fire. And I think there's a Ramana Maharshi quote somewhere that says you can't cook food over a painted flame, right? So a painted flame of fire, you know, it won't do anything for you. And a painting of a woman is not a woman. I'm not saying it won't do anything for you, because I think for some men it does. But it's still not the same thing, is it? Right? And wise words are mere words, not wisdom. Again, I'm not going to say they won't do anything for you, because they clearly will. Or contemplation, teaching, speaking would have no purpose at all. And we all know that all teachers will tell you these things have their purpose. But I think that what the Supreme Yoga is trying to help us see is, again, the difference between truth and that which points to truth. Right? The difference between the moon and the finger that points at it, I believe, is the Buddhist saying. So let's go to 131 in the journal. Ideas of self, reality, isness, present moment, and truth are not the direct experience of that which they speak of. Jamie, hold on. Jamie, no, you need to go outside. You're dirty. Come here, go outside. Come here. Go outside with Danielle. Okay, let me read that again. Jamie needed words. See, words have their place. She totally got the words. Ideas of self, reality, isness, present moment, and truth are not the direct experience of that which they speak of. Let go of speaking and thinking. Be not satisfied with ideas. If you're watching the posts that I've made on Facebook the last couple of days, they've been about letting go of speaking. Obviously, I talk. I'm talking now. And yet, at the same time, there is a letting go of speaking that has occurred. There are conversations that I would have, taken part in, things I would have said that are now going unsaid or I am not taking part in anymore. There's just this learning that's occurring. Although, again, some of these discussions have been very helpful to a point. It's almost like we're walking on a bridge that continually kind of crests and turns. And when it turns, you have to turn with it. And then it crests and turns. And then it crests and turns. And it's still bridge to bridge to bridge to bridge, which is trying to get you to the other shore. But when the bridge comes and crests and then turns, you have to turn with it. If you try to stay with the previous section of bridge, somehow the progress stops. So even though that part of the bridge was useful to get you this far, there comes a point when it crests and turns and you need to step off of that part of the bridge onto the next part of the bridge. And it seems like for me, and also it seems like for some others, I'm hearing others feel this is true for them as well, a lot of the talking that occurred before, a lot of the spiritual discussion that occurred before has ceased to be helpful and has now become the obstacle. That which was helpful for a time has now become the obstacle. And when this realization hits, and I'm not saying that everyone is there, someone else may still be on the section of the bridge where the discussion is very helpful, right? But when the realization hits that the discussion is now becoming the hindrance, well, then all one can do, if that one wants to continue to cross over to the other shore using the bridge, all one can do is begin to step out of that same discussion. And that seems to be what has occurred with me with this year of increased silence, with this study of the seven steps. My guidance, I think you know, is to read no other books or listen to no other teachers. There's that which has been helpful before is now becoming the obstacle. And I am being guided to only go within, to go deeply within, to listen only to myself, to follow myself, and to be much more silent. A painted pot of nectar is not nectar, nor a painted flame fire. And a painting of a woman is not a woman. Wise words are mere words, not wisdom. You know, this isn't new. There's a place in A Course in Miracles in the workbook where Jesus says something like, the time for words has ended. It's just that maybe when most of us read it, that wasn't actually true for us yet. But this isn't new. And maybe now some of us are coming to that point. All right, so let's scroll down and go to 132. I don't think anyone new is in the room, but it's easy, so I will go ahead and paste the link. "132, the Supreme Yoga in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, says, they who are established in the state of liberation, as pointed out by the scriptures, surely cross this ocean of world appearance as their consciousness flows towards the south. But they who are caught in the net of polemics, which are only productive of sorrow and confusion, forfeit their own highest good. Even in the case of the path shown by the scriptures, only one's direct experience leads one along the safest way to the supreme goal." Does anybody know what polemics is? No wise people in the room, but we have an iPad. The iPad is very wise. That's okay, I can step. I can step right over. I think it might be kind of like argumentation, but I'm not sure. So let's pull up the iPad, which can do anything, and let's ask the iPad what polemics is. Let's see. Here we go. Yep, a controversial argument as one against some opinion. A person who argues in opposition to another. So it's like an argument or an arguer. Right? So with that, let's read this one more time. "They who are established in the state of liberation, as pointed out by the scriptures, surely cross this ocean of world appearance as their consciousness flows towards the self. But they who are caught in the net of polemics, argumentation, disagreement, which are only productive of sorrow and confusion, forfeit their own highest good. Even in the case of the path shown by the scriptures, only one's direct experience leads one along the safest way to the supreme goal." So, again, he seems to be talking about that tendency that I talked about before, where we want to become fundamentalist about something. It doesn't matter if we're fundamentalist about the Bible, about the Course, about Advaita, about mixing paths. You know, once we become fundamentalist about something, that something has then become an obstacle for us. And it is not being used for our highest good, which was its intention. You know, he talks about those who are established in the state of liberation. He says they cross this ocean of world appearance as their consciousness flows towards the self. The image I get in that is someone who is able to use what is given to be used in the world, right? The things that are given that help to wake us up are in the world. They're a part of the illusion. But they're able to flow through it, flow along that path that is given to them without getting stuck in attachment to whatever is given, right? They do not stop at the feet of the symbols and make them idols. The Course does not become an idol. The teacher does not become an idol, right? Let's go ahead and look and see what I wrote in the journal. Number 132 in the journal says, "If I had never learned anything about what is true or false, or right or wrong, or up or down, what would I have to guide me? Follow that and do not attempt to defend what is followed." Okay, so I remember when I posted this, and I remember a conversation popped up that day about basically the gist of the conversation was, what the hell is this post about? You know, like somebody said something like, I usually understand what Regina writes, but this one is a little over my head. So let me just quickly explain what this meant to me. Again, fundamentalism. This fundamentalism comes from the idea that we know what is right. I know the course is truth, or I know Advaita is the best path, or I know meditation is the best path, or I know surrender is the best path, right? I know this one is right, that one is wrong. So the question becomes, what if I had never learned anything about what is true or false, or right or wrong, or up or down even? What would I have to guide me? Right? And the answer for me is that current moment intuition. That current moment intuition that is telling me right now to be in the seven steps and nothing else. Which I would imagine at some point is going to tell me to put down the seven steps and go somewhere else. You see, if I only follow that instead of holding up the seven steps, this is the greatest book in the world. Everybody should be doing the seven steps. If you're still on the course and you're not to the seven steps yet, you are in kindergarten, you know, blah, 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 blah. Put it down, move on, right? This is what we do. We love the course while we're in the course, but then we don't love the course anymore when we're in the seven steps, because now our fundamentalist mind is attached to this. But what if I never attached to ideas like that? What if I never attached to ideas? Then all I would have is that current moment guidance that's telling me what's right for me right now. And then that what tells me what's right for me, you know, when another time comes then. Then wouldn't I be like these people that surely cross this ocean of world appearance, right? Because again, all of these things are coming to me in the illusion. But wouldn't I be like one of these ones that surely cross this ocean of world appearance as their consciousness flows towards the self? No idea of getting stuck. No symbol, nothing that becomes an idol. No symbol that becomes an idol. Nothing helpful that is given that I become fundamentalist about. And then, not only that, geez, our mind is tricky. Because what could really happen if I'm not on my toes is I could actually become fundamentalist about that, following guidance. And that's why the last line in this is, follow that, meaning current moment intuition, and do not attempt to defend what is followed. Because if someone then begins to challenge me on what I'm currently following, I do not want to become fundamentalist about my guidance and say, but my guidance has me here, you know, in an ego type of way. Right? I don't want to become fundamentalist about that either. And in fact, if I'm listening to my guidance in the moment, my guidance will probably have me be very humble, very silent, you know, say very little to the person who feels that they are correcting me and telling me that some other path is better. I probably just won't get involved in that. I will probably just listen or something, say very little. So if I had never learned anything about what is true or false, right? I hadn't learned something, right? The Course is true, the Bible is false, for example. If I had never learned anything about what is right or wrong, Advaita is right, and the Course, which has way too much duality in it, is wrong. Another idea that's out there. Or if I'd never even learned what is up or down. If I'd never learned anything and stored it in this brain for retrieval, then what would I have to guide me? Only my intuitive current moment, what's best for me now. That's all I'd have. So follow that and do not attempt to defend what is followed. Become not even fundamentalist about that. I am one who follows guidance is another error identity. Okay, it is 12:59, which means we do not have time to move on to 1:33. So that is where we will start next Sunday night. Thanks, you guys, for hanging out with me and Zoe and Devin. Maybe I'll see you guys later. Okay, love you all. Bye.